We should make a decision on where we want to put the clock.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I really miss that clock. I don't know about you.
It's bothering me. I think it needs to go over there.
Can we put it? We put it on the big. Well, yeah, but I can't see it. It's a bad angle. How about we put it right there in that panel?
Just for the privilege, I think, of being the first people to sit under our new
Signs
are that thing. Holy crap, that's like...
Furthermore, we can take pictures of the back of your head.
I say, all right, let's start with the formalities here. It's tape on?
Yes.
Okay, it's 9:10, Monday morning, May 24th. Hereby call the Committee of Public Safety and Security to order. We have a quorum with legislators Burton and Ryan. And you can... our legislators are known at Harcum. Just walk it as we
apologize.
The meeting. No, so we're pretty much a full squad.
How are you?
Right in.
And I think we may be the first committee meeting that starts with our big TV screen up here. our new digs here.
Is it what? That's the question.
It's a nice ornament. So welcome everybody. We have today, Justin, I'll let you introduce yourselves for the record.
Good morning, committee members. My name is Justin Prine. I'm the special assistant to Commissioner Kevin Chiburco. Also with me is Deputy Commissioner William Mazuka, who's new on board at DOC, as of my less than a year. So it's our first time both here.
I had the chance to meet both gentlemen last week. I paid a visit to the jails and tour of the facility. Got myself acclimated. Been 30 years plus since I had been over there, but I thought my new capacity here, I should go and check things out.
You won't even ask.
Yeah, what closed 30 years ago, right?
Has your record been expunged?
I don't need to talk about that. Locked and sealed.
Nobody's ever brought it up again.
We appreciate you coming today. We thought... we would get, well, we're open to anything, but I thought specifically to get an update. I know some of us met last week upstairs with a company from Tennessee, but if you could kind of walk us through the search itself, with the background, and then bring us right up to date. We have, as the members know, the inmate health care issue. The medical center has given notice. I guess it gave, 180-day notice, that it no longer wished to provide service because of the financial implications and the analysis, what they felt it was not a good deal, not a financially appropriate deal. So back, and then Justin, let you go back several months ago, what did the administration, well, I thought it would be helpful for the community just, and all of us to get an update on this. Just
thank you, Mr. On January 27th, we received a certified letter from Mr. Israel indicating that the medical center was going to opt out of the third year of a three-year deal to provide inmate comprehensive medical services, medical, mental health, dental, ancillary, both on-site and over at the medical center. As you stated, they could give us less than 180 days notice. They could have did it on 60 days. They gave us 180 days, essentially 6 months. Almost immediately upon receipt of that letter, we began our internal vetting process by reaching out to other local, similarly situated jails in New York State and outside of New York State, finding out who the key players were, finding out which agencies were equipped to handle an operation of the size and scope of ours. We vetted several different names. As you can imagine, once people in the industry heard about the fact of the situation that we were placed in, the calls came rolling in. So we did a lot of our internal vetting of groups everywhere from Florida to Denver. We were able to winnow down that initial large group of approximately 15 or 20 groups down to 5 or 6 key players, and from them we really consolidated down to 4 groups. The one group that you did indicate from Tennessee is Correct Care Solutions. There was a second group called Correctional Medical Care, which has 7 jails in New York State. There was another group which was an offshoot of a nursing agency. And there was another group that focuses largely on mental health, but also provides medical services as well. That fourth group was bidding on Rikers. A lot of these groups are bidding on RFPs out there, either for Nassau, Rikers, or other large jails in New York State. All of those 4 groups came into DOC. They had an opportunity to see the size and scope of our operations. It's a back-and-forth vetting process. They were able to see whether this was something that they were equipped to handle financially and operationally. We were able to see whether they could meet our criteria. Eventually, from those four, we had their executive staff come in. They toured the facility. We sat down several times. We received written proposals. From those four, we really came down to two, which we thought were most appropriate: Correct Care Solutions, which is the group from Tennessee, and Correct Medical Care, which is the group that specializes, that has seven jails in New York State. Of those two, we thought that Correct Care Solutions was better because they specialize in large local jails. They have about 60 from California to Florida. They have Monmouth County. They have Charlotte, Las Vegas, Charleston, South Carolina, a couple places outside of Chicago, Omaha, Nebraska, the entire state of Kansas DOC system, the entire state of Vermont DOC system. They are a very robust company. They came in, they gave us a proposal, which was comprehensive, hit the ground running. So that was certainly our preferred provider. While this is all going on, we have had conversations with the medical center as well. That's why the commissioner is not here today. He's presently speaking with Mr. Israel and with people from the ninth floor, just to hear them out and make sure that everyone's had an opportunity to fully chime in on exactly where we stand going forward. Deb, do you have anything else?
Just all the vetting we did. Those, as Justin said, those two contractors, both particularly CCS, has experience with transitions, difficult transitions, and we've spoken to people all over the country that have both contractors, and CCS seems to be the one that has the most experience with large facilities.
Mr. Burton.
Well, what were we paying the medical center in this last year?
It was a three-year of $42 million plus, and this 2010 would be $14,660,000.
And the medical center indicated that that was insufficient.
Yes.
Did they put a price on what would have been sufficient?
No, not to my knowledge.
Okay, thank you.
In your vetting process, did you engage services or any outside consultant to help you, or did you do this sort of internally just among
We did not engage an outside person. We do have a health services coordinator who's a county employee, but who also is a auditor for the National Commission on Correctional Healthcare. So she goes out and audits other facilities. So she'll go to Florida for 3 days, take personal days and go down there, and she's aware of those standards. As you guys know, probably department is both NCCHC and ACA accredited. So what we wanted to do was find a vendor that was familiar with these standards, that holds themselves to these standards in other facilities, and that also would be able to come in and engage the New York State Commission on Corrections, which is our oversight agency. So we did use Ms. Iazzo as a point person to go out and vet these places. And then we did our own internal research of them. We looked at their litigation histories. We looked at whether they were financially solvent, whether there was any hot-button issues out there that were Googleable, if you will. So we really felt that the group that we, it's our preferred provider, Correct Care Solutions, fit the bill for that.
Thank you. Maybe just very quickly give the committee a brief description of just what's going on. You have an infirmary. How many medical center employees are on-site with you? And just the relationship, how that
We're the second largest local jail in New York State. We have the capacity to house anywhere up to 1,800 people, single beds, males, females, minors, 16 to 18. We have a jail division, which is mostly pretrial detainees, and we have a penitentiary division, who are people serving up to two consecutive one-year sentences. All of those people need medical care. A lot of those people need mental health care and have addiction issues. We have a population of people that have significant drug dependence, people that come in with asthma, suicide issues, dialysis needs, AIDS treatment, a variety of different pharmaceutical issues. So our contract would call for everything internally within the facility, and we also need somebody to handle those people that we can't meet their needs in the building, that have to go, to the hospital or to a locked psychiatric ward, which we have right now in our forensic unit, which might be changing. With regard to employees, I think at present the medical center has 75 full-time equivalents, which consists of a full-time director of mental health, 2.5 full-time medical doctors, a full-time dentist, a dental tech, admin staff, records people, RNs, mid-level practitioners. So really, it is a comprehensive package that we have on site there. We have clinics in both Penn and different housing areas, medical records area. Mr. Nunn?
Oh, sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you.
John, let me just start. Peter wanted to go first. If you finish presentation, then John, I'll get to you, John. But Pete.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to get back to that issue of the red flags that you mentioned. Could you go into more detail on that kind of research? Because that's the kind of thing that we as legislators, you know, we don't want to see that coming back to bite anybody. So what kind of due diligence did you do, and are there any red flags that we should be aware of?
Understandably, neither do we. We both looked at it from a Westlaw or Lexis search just to find out how many active cases they are. I mean, obviously, in this industry, you're not going to ever be litigation-free just by the nature. You have people that are incarcerated that don't want to be there, that have time on their hands, and sue you.
Yeah.
But we were looking for things where there was high verdicts, deaths in custody, anything like that, and correct care. We asked them, frankly, when they came in, what are the red flags? What's something that's going to embarrass us? What's something that you see as a potential issue? And they indicated to us that they have a very successful litigation history. Our internal review did not see any major issues out there with any kind of large-scale, problems with regard to healthcare or delivery of services or anything that would present a red flag. Mr. Boyle, who's the president of Correct Care, was frank with us that he used to be attached to other groups that provided health care in the past, and we had a private health care provider, but the reason he founded this company was because he could not change a culture in these other places, and since then he's been able to start things, from day one and be able to grow a company and cultivate it the way that he wanted to. So they were very upfront with us. We did our due diligence from things as simple as a Google search to Westlaw to, looking out there, and as I said, and as Deb Mazuka said, we called several of their providers, or their current clients, all of whom I would characterize as having rave reviews of the services that they have as provided, as compared to a lot of these other people that were bidding on Westchester Corrections, our contract now. A lot of these places had these groups, and they said when we went over to Correct Care, it was it's been an excellent transition. It was smooth. We haven't had any major issues. As recently as last week, that Mazuka and the team went down to Monmouth County in New Jersey and toured there to see Correct Care, in action as they're handling, and you can characterize that.
We spoke to over, I believe we spoke to 24 clients of CCS, and one of the questions obviously was lawsuits, grievances, and in no case did we find where there was a major lawsuit. Lawsuits either stayed the same or decreased. There was no major award. There was the grievances, just typical inmate complaints, nothing that really major out of that. And when we went down to Monmouth, some of the things we looked at there, the setup would be somewhat similar to what they would encounter at the docks. And one of the things about that also is when they transitioned into there, there was some difficult times because of the prior provider, and in several cases, what we did hear from the people we surveyed was that we did have these other contractors, providers. We had difficulty with them. CCS came in at some very difficult times. There was a particular DOJ report that they helped get the facility through. Several of them walked into the middle of an ACA accreditation process. And so pretty much everything that they would be facing here at docs, they've gone through at other facilities, at other sites.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Chair. When we get finished with this area, I have another line of questioning related to DOJ. Thank you.
So, if I understand it correctly, do we have permanent staff, medical staff, there already?
Medical staff has it's a combination of both medical staff and New York Medical College staff as well. You have medical college staff there by way of affiliation agreements where they're actually subcontracting for, and that's mostly the doctors and the higher level people, are medical college. But you do have a significant bulk of the staff there are medical center staff.
Okay. So if you take away the medical center staff and the New York Medical College staff, is there any other medical staff on site?
No.
Okay. So CC, this community care services,
solutions
would come in and take over the whole operation.
Right, and they said that their plan would be to retain as many people as possible from this group. They're going to come in there and be very frank with these people and say, listen, your current boss is leaving, but we would still like to continue a relationship with you. Interview them, vet them, tell them what their, you know, their benefit package is that they can offer them, and try and retain as many of the good people that we have there as possible.
You anticipated my question. They come in, where do they get the personnel? So,
right. Well, they said that they would, that they try not to use any kind of agency staffing, if at all possible. Obviously, the first
agency staffing means what?
To go get it from a third party,
right,
like a nursing staffing group or something like that. Right. They want people there that are CCS staff because they have a level.
Their own employees.
Their
so
own
they
employees.
Would hire people away from the medical center?
If people want to leave the medical center.
Yeah.
Most of the people that are there we're talking about are you know, union members. They may have bumping rights. They may want to slot back into the medical center.
And they're there full-time, seriously. They're people from the medical center who work at the jail or basically working there full-time equivalents.
Yeah, John, I think the plans of the medical center, I don't know if they already gave the give note, they have to essentially release the people, their employees working at the jail, they would be let go. Now, there may be bumping rights, and they may come back in.
They may be able to go back to the
right,
medical
go back
center.
In, but somewhere, might, but somewhere might, along the medical might, center is going to lose, or, right.
Or they might
right,
be hired
exactly.
by
right.
Community care. Maybe you were getting into this, Peter, but Mike, maybe you have the same question. My next question was going to be, how are they aware of the DOJ report? I mean, how would they interface with respect to some of the issues raised in that report, which focused to me on infection control and on mental health services?
They are aware of the report. It's a public document on the DOJ website. They came in the first day, and they had already vetted us. They were aware of a lot of the, you know, issues in our standing with accreditation and the DOJ's report. As Deb Mazuka indicated, they're not... it's not the first time that they've walked into a facility that has either oversight from the DOJ by way of a consent decree or had some other aspect of their operations being looked at by the DOJ. So they are fully, you know, apprised of what the DOJ's recommendations are, what our responsive measures would be, and they feel confident they can handle it. And, you know, we're not operating under any kind of an agreement with the DOJ right now.
Right. There's been no consent decree entered into.
No, their initial report. We did an initial response. We've not heard.
And that's where you are right now. Oh, okay. So I know you responded, and so
we responded
no
in writing, and
there's
and
been no response to your response or reply.
On January 29th, we haven't heard anything.
Is that?
Yeah, that was exactly it. Thank you.
Can you come back to that staffing? Just you know, we deal with a lot of different entities right here. So if if this is the way it went, and nothing's final, this is just what's pending. Presumably, I mean, we don't really know for sure, but I assume this current care, they don't necessarily work with unionized group. If they take these people, they would be coming out of the union, be working with them on a non-union basis.
That's my understanding.
So potentially, they would be making less money, less benefits, whatever.
Well,
that
I'd like to.
Or they have to leave the union.
Well, they right.
Well,
you want to
have, go ahead. Do they have any union units?
I don't believe that they have any unionized workforce. You mean in other jails?
Yeah, in other locations.
I'm not sure about that, Mr. Burks.
Are you aware of any issues in their past where they have been hostile to attempts to unionize?
Not that I'm aware of.
Have you looked into that, or is it just nothing's popped up?
Nothing popped up.
Okay. I would personally be interested in knowing whether they have had any experiences where an attempt was made to organize a point.
I think we certainly probably would hear.
Well, we would hear from our brothers and sisters.
If this were
to happen,
but
let's jump ahead of this one.
Well, that's right. If this transition happened and people were rehired and the salaries were.
And there could be problems. Why not?
Okay.
But,
I do know in our surveys that in most cases the staff stayed whatever facility they were in. They didn't stay.
But I guess trying to look into this, you said there's approximately 75 either medical center and or medical college employees, one way they're working inside the jail system. We don't know if they came in, they would cut that to 60 people or 90 people. They'd have to come in, do their analysis of staffing, and then they would set up an operation. But
No, they're going to have to give us a price. They're going to have to do that well in advance.
Well, price of their contract, but actually, we're not micromanaging, but they're going to come in. My understanding is like the medical center is $14.6. They're going to come in and say, we can do it for $14.5. It's just a number.
Or $15.3.
Or $15.3, whatever, a number. But then what we can see is about 75 people. We don't know, they come up with a number, then they cut that to 60 or go to 90. But that's, without getting micromanaging. You haven't had those kinds of discussions, how exactly they would staff out or...
They said basically the first 60 to 90 days is just hold on with the existing operation, and then as they really get a feel for, this is a large operation, they're going to have to just hold on for the first few months, and then as they really develop to see exactly how things run and where they can collapse or consolidate or make changes or expand, it's not going to be within the first quarter of any contract where they come in.
Let me just remind the committee, as Justin said, that Commissioner Tamirko was talking, I guess, decision right now, and it's always, it's not a done deal that they're switching over. To make that clear, they're still on.
Do you have a timeline for when you expect to make a decision? I realize it's a little tumultuous with the medical center still being in the picture, but assuming, is there some sort of drop dead time when you're going to make this decision?
It would certainly be ASAP. They really need time to transition in. They're prepared to, assuming we were to go with this group, they would move on a letter of intent to start staging their people, a transition team, which would be basically an eight-person group that would come in and start looking at policies, looking at staffing levels, looking at where they're going to get all their contract providers, all that kind of stuff. So as soon as possible.
Bill, I think it's fair to say what we heard last week, that if they have this meeting today, depending on how the meeting goes, as early as tomorrow or the next day, they give a medical center a very, very short window to say you're in, or if you're not in, so it could be within a matter of days.
Right? I agree with that.
It's going to be. So our meeting is very timely because we're right. Things are going to happen this week.
We had an opportunity this morning, as I guess most everyone knows, to kind of talk a little bit about this. The meeting with CCS with the out of Nashville. Was an important meeting, as it seemed to be one of the final sit downs before a decision would be made to possibly go with them. At that point, of course, I think it's safe to say that the administration and the legislature still assign tremendous weight to the value of having the medical center in the picture. The continuity of service, the fact that everything is right there and available to be used to continue these services. The thinking was that the administration and the board should go back to the medical center and ask them about the number, with some real focus and attention given to security costs. That seems to be a number that's hard to peg. It's more of a range built on historical data. So knowing that all of this had to be done, accomplished rather quickly, by, I guess, Friday, that conversation was to have taken place. Mike Israel reports that he thought that the conversation was a very positive one. And he was sure that the medical center and the county could come up with a number that would work for everyone, which would mean that going to a contractor, bringing them in, having them have to race all over the area to start setting up contractual relationships with service providers, whether they be labs or someone that is expert in X-raying or whatever the needs might be of a healthcare provider for docs. Someone to care for inmates off-site. Do you go back to the medical center? Do you negotiate with them to put into place a contract that would make them the receiver of inmates coming out of the pen or the jail for mental health services to be delivered in a hospital? Do you go to some other area hospital to do that? All the things that are necessary. These contracts have to be negotiated and set into place. all of that would be unnecessary if the medical center comes back with a number that we can live with, and where the contract going forward seems to make sense for them financially and for the taxpayers financially. So that's really where we are this morning. There was a thought that they could come back right away and give us an answer, and in fairness, they should at least be given a day or two to work out, take a pencil and work out some numbers. So I think that Friday over the weekend and today is being devoted to that, and it could very well be these gentlemen, I'm sure, are really anxious to get the word, as are we, that something has been resolved. Could be where we continue on smoothly, or it could be where we have to go with a contractor. I don't know whether or not that road is as smooth as it's been portrayed.
I think the transition.
Yeah.
It was a transition.
And I think that just in the what's the drop dead day? What's the target day we're looking at?
I would say by the end of this week, absolutely.
No. For implementation.
July 26th.
Yeah. Okay. July 26th will come quickly. A lot of these outfits will tell you that, you know, within 30 days is tough, 45 days is tough. But to accomplish all of this within that short period of time, where a lot of these contracts with outside providers that CCS would need to make use of here, those talks haven't even begun yet. So this is really a race to the finish line of July 26th. And like I say, I think that the preferable road certainly is the one where, without interruption, we continue on with the medical center at the core of service provision. But we'll have to wait and see whether or not that number's reached today. But in any event, we'll know soon enough.
Do we have a number for a community correctional care solutions?
Yeah, one of the things that I did from the meeting, I think, Marty, you probably remember this as well, but we had a base fee of $14,199,000, and they threw in an off-site variable risk number of $300,000. And they've got a not to exceed amount of $14,499. And there was some other stuff in there. There's a CPI.
$14,499.
Yeah. But the point is, and I figured we'd have an opportunity to talk about this week. I know that I have problems with the contractor being able to put a cost for us on the table. When they're coming into one of the most difficult, most expensive areas in the country to structure these things, you can't minimize that, and they haven't finalized any contracts yet. I mean, in order to tell us what they'll need to get to provide these services, I would think that they would have to pretty much know what every single contract is that they are now going to have to negotiate and take that, those, aggregate that number and then present to us, well, this is what it will cost. And one of the big fears, if you quote the number, you find that you can just arrange so much for it. There's a question as to whether or not all of the services, all of the levels of care, which would be our expectation, that are needed, are going to be there for the inmates, for those that need to receive that care, whether or not it's all going to be present. And I think that it's just very difficult to put that number on the table. And I don't want to get into a situation where, as we did with the emergency room operation at the medical center a few years ago, where we went to a private contractor, they cited the number, the number was agreed to, and they came, and then there were like 17 addendums. And every one of them carried, well, we need more to do this. Well, we need more to do this. We need more to do this. That's something that we have no interest in getting involved with here. And that I think, is a possibility if we're taking a number before they know for sure whether or not the number's rock solid that they're giving to us.
Bill, before I get to Bill, I'm just a process question. You know, we like to sit here, a co-equal branch of government, policymakers, Let me just walk through the scenario, though. There's been a lot of negotiations, and I guess the Joint Review Committee, I mean, the board, I think, has been involved as we go through, but we're getting down to the end to where you're heading, Bill. If a decision today, tomorrow, you know, ultimately, all right, someone's going to make the decision, and I, you know, I'm going to assume it's the ninth floor, or we're out of on that decision. We, though, I think, Bill, aren't we going to have to vote on the contract? Or is it just A and C? Or the,
well,
so there may be a role, but I guess the whole process of doing something and then there's those addendums.
All right,
what's the process?
Just go to A and C.
Yeah, okay. So the entire contract is just A and C. There's no.
We had discussed the administration was going to rush something down to us today. However, Bob, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. For A&C to act on this, there needs to be some statutory authority in place.
My discussions with your department.
Right.
They just told me A&C.
3-year
contract. Okay, A&C will authorize, will grant the authority for the county through DOC to enter into this agreement. But before you can handle anything on A&C, there needs to be some statutory authority in place. Is there something already in place that provides blanket authority for us to act on this? And I just throw this out. I don't know. I don't recall.
Well, if we have money in the budget, it means, of course, I mean, we had prior contracts with the medical center.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know myself, but that's why I'm trying to get to what role. If it only goes to A and C, then what we're discussing right now,
there's a couple of possibilities.
Becomes very important. What input are we going to have into this decision?
We will cast a yes or a no vote at A and C. Should it be put on the A and C agenda? It could be put on the A and C agenda as quickly as they could convene a meeting. That allows them to issue the letter of intent and off goes CCS. But excuse me, one of the things that I just threw out on the table the other day for the administration to consider, make sure that if this requires an act, which would be the statutory authority for A&C to handle the specifics, then we need to have that act in front of us and either in a regular or special meeting pass that. And the whole point being, over the years, there have been times where A&C items show up, actions taken, and it, as it turns out, they weren't any good because the statutory authority wasn't in place for A&C to act.
But it sounds like the county attorney's office has given Bob some indication that.
Well, he's gonna find this.
Bill, would you? Yeah. Legislator Burton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The off-site issue, which Bill put a tag of $300,000 on, is that having to do with the use of the medical center as the place for prisoners who have to be taken out of the jail or the pen? Is that what that's all about? Is that what we mean by off-site?
Off-site does mean either Ward 29 or some other secure staging area to put prisoners, and then also what we call off-ward. So at present we have a...
excuse me, Justin.
Hey, Jim.
Yeah, it's okay.
So I push the speakerphone button?
Okay, go ahead, Jim. Jim, you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Hey, Jim, just a quick question.
Bill Ryan.
It came up in our meeting last week with the contractor from Nashville on correctional health.
Right.
All right. Is the statutory authority already in place for the Acquisition and Contract Board to act on a resolution that would authorize a contract, authorize a letter of intent? Is that already in place, or is that something that the board would have to quickly take up and pass?
No, the board wouldn't have to do anything. It's a contractual service. The only reason you get involved with the medical center is because, I think it's section 304 sub 7 of the public authorities law requires you to...
So the statutory authority is already in place, then?
What's special about the privatizations? You guys never approved EMSA, or I can't remember the name of the...
Yeah, all right.
Other vendor before that. You only get involved when the medical center is involved.
Okay, so the statutory authority then, what you went back and cited from, is already there.
Well, no. That's just for the medical center. So if we knew with the medical center, yeah, we'd have to come to the board.
Okay.
But with this company from Tennessee, CCS, you would just go to A&C. The statutory authority for contracting is in the charter. I mean, it's the section, section 161.11.
Yeah, that's just generally, though.
Or main C.
Right. Okay.
When legislators only gets involved, I mean, I guess you could argue through the budgeting process, so as long as they have enough in contractual services for correctional health care to pay for the CCS contract, there's no action necessary by the board.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. They pass it, I guess, subject to appropriation like they do any other contract. You know, they have the money in for this year, and then
right.
the rest of the contract subject to further appropriation by the board.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Jim.
That's good, Jim.
Okay. Let me just just take 10 seconds to welcome the special visitors. My name is Martin Rogowski. I'm chairman of the Committee on Public Safety and Security. This is a committee meeting of that committee. We have a couple of gentlemen from the Department of Corrections. We have every day approximately 1,500 people in jail here in Westchester County. And today we're talking about the health care of those inmates. Westchester County is responsible. Once someone is arrested and comes into our jails, we in Westchester County are responsible for all of their health care. And so we have a couple of gentlemen from the Department of Corrections, and we're discussing a new contract and how it's millions and millions of dollars each year to provide that health care. And we're just asking some questions as to how we go about doing that. So Mr. Burke, continue.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Bill, just on that 300,000 number, That was like an add-on. That was like an addition to the range.
It's a risk. They're going to take on the risk of the first $2.5 million. Frankly, it's like a donut. In the first $2.5 million, they're going to take the risk. The next $600,000 we share. That's where the $300,000 comes in, and then they're on the hook. So it wasn't identified any. It could be very likely. What's their unknown? Whatever their unknown is. That's where the
is what's over
is what's the
over.
So that's
I guess they. We've all gotten a lot of emails from staff at the WMC section, and they're more or less canned emails, but not completely. And one of them has had to do with what does the county do if we bring in somebody from the outside? How are we going to place people who are not going to be treated in the prison or in the jail, but have to go for surgery or whatever? How are we going to deal with those people if the medical center is no longer involved, may even be in a hostile situation? What do we do? Do we go to Phelps Hospital? Do we go up to Northern Westchester? Do we go to Sound Shore? Do we go to where? Is that so? Obviously, you've thought about this, but I'm curious as to what the possibilities are here.
And as Mr. Ryan did indicate, that is one of the unknowns. CCS, the group who's coming in, did indicate that once they get a letter of intent, they're going to run on dual tracks, and they're going to try to engage the medical center because it does make sense. We have a secure ward there, and then they're going to try and engage other providers so that in case the medical center says, like you said, if it's going to be hostile, or if they said, listen, guys, we want out of this whole thing, including off-site, then you're going to have to go to a Phelps, or you're going to have to go to some place where you can bring somebody if they need care off-site.
So that's a total unknown at this point, given the nature of the contract negotiation.
Let me say, Bill, they told us historically there's approximately 63 people a year generally that go off-site. Most of the work is done in the infirmary on-site, but 63 times a year they've got to send folks out.
Those 60 people, that relates to people that are what we call off-ward.
Okay.
Those are people which right now would require a bed, which is, Ward 29 is the secure area within the medical center. Those 60 or so people are people who wouldn't go to Ward 29. Those are people that would have labor and delivery or cardiac, where they have to be in a specialized unit outside of the secure ward. So they're in a civilian hospital bed in
but
the medical center.
So there are more inmates than just the 63 who go into the hospital, but they're dealt with in Ward 69.
Right, a lot more.
And to that point, what is that number?
Well, that's one of the things I'm working at. The other thing is that I'm from Ossining, where we have a small New York State prison, and we in Austin use Phelps, and I've made in my day I've made some runs with the emergency unit. There is a lot of business that comes out of there. It's always in a rush. It always seems to be in a rush. It's very labor intensive to take somebody from a maximum security prison like Sing Sing to Phelps. It requires at least two police cars, it requires manacles, all this stuff. It is so brutally expensive to do this, and so much, it seems to me, easier to be working in the medical center, that it, that seems obvious. If the medical center either gets into a decide that they're going to really make a buck or two on this, or they simply say no, are we in real trouble here, or do you see that it's likely that we would be able to get a deal with some of the other regional facilities? Or am I just asking you to speculate in public about something you'd really rather not?
Well, part of my question was Ward 29.
29, I'm sorry, I said something.
Recently, we've, last week, or most days, we had none of our inmates in Ward 29.
I see.
So what the total number for the year is, you know, I don't have that information right now. But
is that a number you can provide for us?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Year to date for Ward 29?
Yeah, or annual
annualized
average.
It's in the hospital.
That's actually in the hospital.
That was one of the, I mean, one of the things we were talking about the other day in front of the Nashville group was that the whole arrangement of handling patients within the correctional facility and then having patients under the same contract in the hospital. And because of the nature of the patient, they immediately go into Ward 29, which is the lockdown unit. And then because there is overflow, and we're just talking about historical data, no one knows what 2010 or 11 or 12 will hold, but because historically we've seen an overflow in Ward 29, which requires then that the patient come into the regular hospital, and once in the regular hospital, the policy has been to, it's a single bed situation. You don't put another person in the room with that individual, and there are security costs now being incurred to guard that individual. And so one of the things we were trying to speculate about is not only was the range of the number in Ward 29, but the range, more importantly, the range of the number of inpatients outside of Ward 29 in the regular rooms. Historically, what has that been? And that's where the number of, 60-some-odd people has shown up. And so we can't say for sure it's going to be 60 in 2010. It may be 89, or it may be 17. And that's what I meant before. It's a range that we're looking at based on historical data. That's been one of the difficult things for the medical center to build into their proposal to us. And it would be one of the difficult things that the medical center would have in trying to build that into a contract with CCS.
Bill, if I can just interrupt it, one of the issues that really came to the surface, and I'm the new kid on the committee, so you may all know this, but in the medical center's discussions, they came up with a number, which I understand it was a low number, of $20,000. Because they go from a two-bed to a one-bed situation, the whole medical center basically runs on semi-private. But when this situation comes up, as Bill just said, they lose a bed. And they threw a number, as I understand, of $20,000, whether someone's there for a day or a week, they just, you know, that security cost, and that may be a low number apparently, but they, and that, so 20,000 times 60 or whatever it was, and that seems is the number that kind of puts them from maybe breaking even or losing. And so the medical center's point of view, as I understand it, was we can fill those two beds. And so unless we get compensated, whether it's 20,000, however you compensate us, you know what? Here's the notice. We're getting out of that business because we're losing all these beds when that happens. And so that's it. Bobby, you want to comment on that?
Yes. I thought the 20,000 represented when Ward 29 was filled and
were
unable to put a patient into.
And that's the overflow.
It's not really an overflow. That 29 is at capacity, and they have to move somebody. Generally, the inmates who go into the beds in the hospital because of their illness, not because 29.
Okay, so it could be dialysis, birth, but whenever they go into the hospital, it could be for a day, just a
half day. We're very rarely in a situation where we're exceeding the capacity in Ward 29, right, and we need to start having overflow housing.
So people just have to go into the medical center because they got a heart attack.
Somebody has a heart attack, and that heart attack raises, we lose a bed.
We lose that money.
These are very good points because that's not how that's been discussed with us in the past. So these are important distinctions to note. So you still you could get with five people in Ward 29, you could still have a situation where six and seven have to go into the other. That's a very good point.
So that's the funny number, the medical center. That's really where we're losing money. And the CCS, we don't really know. From what I saw in this presentation, they have the ability, I guess. They're just going to eat the first $2.5 million that they presented to the administration. Because we don't know how many people get heart attacks, but we're going to eat all the money, and then we're going to share 50-50 the next 600,000, which is the 300,000. But there's a bunch of money before that. They're trying, you know, to get the contract. They're saying, don't worry about these overflows. We'll eat that $2.5 million.
The whole idea of sending the volunteers to eat $2.5 million expenses.
Right, but that's what they put on the table.
Doesn't sound right.
Another point to note, offsite cost. The medical center recently got a grant as well from New York State under what's called, I think it's called HEAL money, where they got a $1.5 million grant to expand Ward 29. So there's even going to be more space within Ward 29 shortly, and that's going to include monitored beds. A lot of the people that are off ward have to be on a bed that has all the hookups, which they don't necessarily have in Ward 29. So you're going to see Ward 29 continuing to expand its capacity.
Oh, I see. They won't have to go into the civilian side.
You might have a decrease in people being in off ward beds.
Well, at the end of the day, I appreciate coming. At the end of the day, it goes to back to our process of our role in this decision making and how it happens. And you know, we've got this information now, Bill. I mean, I thought it was important that we. As this committee,
that's very good.
We got input, but I'm not sure now what input or what advice or what policies we have pushed both.
Is there a draft contract? No, there's no contract.
It may be in the process of being drafted.
Or a term sheet or anything like that. Not even a term sheet.
It was we saw some materials that were put up similar to a PowerPoint, very basic, not a lot of detail, and they're chomping at the bit to get out of the gate with a letter of intent from us just to go out and start to piece things, put them together.
Start hiring people, you know, making arrangements. Well, that's any other questions for the committee? It's 5 to 10.
Your question, though, I mean, it's very clear. If the medical center says, no, we're out, we just can't do the number that you're asking us to do, if that's the word that we get today, then the administration has gone through a process. They have two finalists, one they prefer over the other. A contract will be drawn. It'll go to A&C. The Board of Legislators can concur and go to A&C and vote along with the administration. It would be a 3-0 vote to grant the authority. Or the Board of Legislators, for certain reasons, may say, no, we don't either like this particular contractor or we don't like this arrangement, go back to, or do something else, and in which case, the A&C meeting results in a 2-1 vote for the contract. So CCS would end up with the contract anyway. It would be my hope that if we were felt so strongly about casting a negative vote, and I don't mind doing that, if it's not correct for us, then we should cast a negative vote. But if we felt so strongly, it must be based on reasons that I'm sure we could take to the administration and they would probably concur, because there's enough of us on the board that understand, you know, what some of the real dangerous red flags would be in a situation like this. But there isn't a lot of time, but I think that a lot of the issues have already been explored, and we're alert to the things that could present real problems. But I don't know, I for one, I just hope that today's discussions with the medical center turn out to our advantage.
Any other questions?
I just want to comment following up on Bill. It seems the question comes down to, is it worth paying a premium to keep the medical center because of the continuity, the advantage of having Ward 29 over, and they got a grant to expand it? What happens to that grant if they can't work out a deal?
All of the pricey equipment.
And you have the people in place already? You don't have to.
The people are in place. The machinery is in place. The labs are in place. Everything is already in place.
It's not simple question of saying, okay, they're at 14.1 and the medical center is at 14.4, so we go with the lowest price no matter what.
The pharmacy service, for example. One of the things that was of concern to me last week was we have a full service, fully stocked, on-site certified pharmacy. How do they propose to substitute for that? Well, they would do that using a mail order house out of Nashville.
Yeah, they have a contract. They have a lot of
And anything that's needed on an emergency basis would be secured from a local pharmacy. That's fine. That's fine. But John, to John's point, the better setup is already in place.
And Medical Center also has a fantastic prescription drug deal, so they do very well on drugs. They're not going to be up to the price. Well, but again, all right, so we will see what happens in the next day or so, but... gentlemen, thank you for coming.
Appreciate having
you. You don't have an easy job, and we appreciate the job that you do.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. Give our best to the commissioner. Any other questions? Anybody else? I thought this was a helpful
good meeting.
Motion to close.
Motion to adjourn by Legislator Harkham, seconded by Legislator Burt. All in favor? Please stand and adjourn.
Hey, guys, quickly before you leave, per our discussion in caucus, are you guys on board for signing the letter regarding the energy retrofit legislation?
Absolutely.
Okay. Bill?
Yes.